Good morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 509-727-8977. Or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. Mr. John McKay, how you doing over there?
Good. Sunshine, but maybe some clouds coming in. It's March weather.
It's March weather, but we've had some great days out there. I will tell you, a little bit of sunshine combined with some lower rates and some more hours to show houses, you're not going to hear the realtors complaining at that point.
Yeah.
So we are loving it. Well, we always like to start off the show with our crazy celebrity national story, but today I'm taking it international all the way. So I came across in mansionglobal.com a very interesting auction that's coming up. Now, John, I didn't know this person. Do you know who Karl Lagerfeld is?
Lagerfeld, something to do with, is it fashion, perfume, something?
You absolutely nailed it. So yeah, okay, you did better than I did. Now I'm blown away. I can barely speak right now. So he was actually the creative director for like over 20 years for Chanel.
Okay.
And he has a very iconic style. Like he had white hair and he had like high starched collars. I had to look it up when I found the article.
Yep.
But his apartment that he lived in, this is what was so crazy, was in a building in Paris that overlooked the Seine River. And the building age was 1694.
Ooh.
Right along the river. I mean, you know, obviously it's gone through some historical renovations and stuff. But I mean, I just can't imagine a property that old. And then you see the inside of this apartment, and it's absolutely totally a crazy style, like very like cement floors, glass shelving for books. It's very much so different than the exterior, but the views of the river and everything are amazing. That is going up for auction later this month, with a minimum bid price of $5.7 million, 2,800 square feet. What's interesting is he lived in that property from 07 until 2019, where he passed away at the age of 85. And then Sotheby's and some of the other auction sites have been auctioning off all of his furniture. So that's a long time, though. I couldn't find anywhere who's been living in the property since 2019. But sometimes we see auctions become a popular way to resale some properties that either don't come on the market very often or are very, very difficult to find any sort of comparable sales. So it'll be interesting to report back in a month or two on what that property actually sells for with a starting bid of $5.7 million. Now, on the local story for what affects us here in the Tri-Cities market big time, I'll tell you what, our phone really started ringing off the hook about 2 weeks ago when rates started trending down. They've continued to trend down. As of yesterday, rates were running on a 30-year right about 6.5%. And then even more telling, I saw the 15-year drop below that 6 mark and actually get to 5.875 earlier in the week on a 15-year mortgage. So I think there's definitely, you know, I don't want to say it coincided exactly with political pressure and Super Tuesday and what happened, but there magically is a lot of positivity around rates for this section of the year, election year. And we'll keep a close eye on that. But if somebody's been on the sidelines because they thought rates were 7, now at 6.5 baseline and then with some buy downs, we've seen a lot of clients close in the last couple of weeks with a 5 starting in front of it, high 5. So very, very good indication on what's going on with rates. Now, John, I got to tell you, real estate is no stranger to controversy. right? Like if you see any of these real estate shows, you know, Selling Sunset or Million Dollar Listing, or, you know, even sometimes something as simple as like Fixer, you know, Fix or Flop, you know, Fixer Upper, even House Hunters at times, you see all of the conflict that comes with real estate. Well, the new agency law is not exempt from that conflict. And so I don't know if you remember or not, but at the top of the year, we did a show that talked about the complete makeover of agency law in Washington State. And I got to tell you, one of the things I was excited about that I think is really, really good in that situation is I thought, this is how real estate professionally should have been done in the beginning, meaning a buyer actually has a contract with their buyer's agent, and they know what they're doing. So I really was excited, and, you know, I know better. I was excited to see, okay, how does the implementation of this work? And exactly what I thought would happen is there would be what we have unintended consequences of this. Mm-hmm. And part of that is, you know, an industry can kind of start to mandate professionalism and training and stuff, but it still doesn't stop what I feel is like some of the malpractice that happens with unprofessionalism. So I always take notes from what happens during the course of the week and then bring that as a show topic. And one of the things I think that is really necessary for me to do is go back and look, now that we're 2 months into this, what is some of the controversy and conflict that is happening with the new agency law, and more specifically with buyers. So here's a perfect example of what I'm seeing happening time and time again now, with what's going on with the new law. So the breakdown in the system is coming when, for instance, we do a lot of advertising. Maybe you hear us on the radio show, or you go to the website, you see some ads, and so you're driving around, you see a house that you're interested in, and you're like, man, I should call that guy from the radio. I should give Lance a call, and we want to go look at that house. So in that scenario, a buyer would call our office, and eventually they might get routed to my cell phone, talk to one of our other agents, and they're going to say, hey, there's a house that I'm really interested in going over and looking at off of, let's just say, off of Argent. And you're like, okay, great. Well, let me look up the information on that house for you, see what's happening. And I pull it up. So what's happened in that situation is the house they saw on Argent might not necessarily be listed by my office or myself. But we have access and can show you any house in the Tri-Cities. And so I look up the information on that house. And then I start talking to the client. They're like, you know what? I think that really is a home that I would like to go and see. So because of the agency law and what happens now, one of the first things that we do on that phone call is we say to the client, do you have an agent you're already working with? And they might say, well, I've seen a house or two with an agent, but I haven't really picked an agent that I'm working with. So our next question, since the new law has gone into effect over the last two months, our next question is, have you signed anything? Because now with agency law, if you've seen more than one house with an agent, you would likely be considered in violation of that law if you had not signed anything.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've gotten numerous times again is, you know what? I did sign something. The agent said, yeah, this is something that I have to sign. Well, I would start to argue here's where our breakdown in professionalism comes into play, because in each instance, we have asked, when you signed that brokerage services agreement with that agent that you saw that other house with, did you enter an exclusive or a non-exclusive relationship? Every single time they have said, I have no idea. The agent just said, I have to sign this. So that gives me an entire radio show, John, to talk about.
Oh, I said just sign here.
Well, so, yeah, and I guess I shouldn't be surprised about this too much, because in our society of, let me use apps, for instance. If you're scrolling on your phone, about every 6 months, you get our terms and conditions have changed on the app. If you're like me or some people, you scroll quickly to the bottom of it, check the box, and log in to use the app you wanted to.
Yes.
Now, I would argue in a real estate purchase transaction or picking your agent, it might be a little more important than the terms and conditions of an app. But society-wise, that's what we've gotten into, where we don't read all of that stuff. Well, this buyer brokerage services agreement with that agent, when they ask you to sign something like that, it creates a very, very binding relationship and can, if you're checking the wrong boxes on that agreement, and obligate you to pay. So the phone conversations we're having, where the conflict comes into play, is as soon as an agent has told us that and they've gone back and looked, and we had a couple text messages in the last couple of days, and they're like, hey, thanks for reminding me about that. I went back and looked, and yeah, I have signed a buyer agency agreement with, you know, it could be any number of firms. I hope in most cases, every time, I hope if they've seen more than one house with another agent that it is signed, because then at least they're following the law. What I'm finding that the problem is they don't know, the client doesn't know what they're signing. They don't know what it obligated them to. And they checked the exclusive box, which means if the area is defined as the Tri-Cities, any home you see in the Tri-Cities, over the course, regardless of who you see it with, over the course of the term of that agreement, there is a high, high likelihood that you are going to owe the money, the commission that you've agreed to in that agreement. That's my next big problem with this, is not only do they not know if they're exclusive or non-exclusive, they can't remember what they agreed to pay their agent. But whatever that was, you're going to owe them at the close of that transaction. So a lot of times in those cases, we're having to say to those clients, if you checked that exclusive box and now you've told us that, there is absolutely no good reason for me to go show you that house on Argent. And so then that's another explanation, because I'm not the listing agent. Mm-hmm. So I don't represent the seller. So it doesn't help. There's no seller that I'm helping to get that house sold that I currently represent. And now you are in an exclusive representation with another real estate agent. Mm-hmm. So if I go show you that house and you end up writing it up or liking it, you're going to owe your other agent you signed that exclusive agreement with a commission. You could end up owing two people a commission in that situation.
Yikes.
And so I definitely want to get the word out there for the consumers, is when you are going, and it's so new and really very, very progressive of our state. And don't get me wrong, at the end of the day, I couldn't be happier that this is what we've implemented in our state. We are actually leading the nation right now with this. There's a lot of other states that don't have this mandated as a requirement, and they're all struggling to try to figure out how that works. The problem is the professionalism of the people that are getting them signed, and the consumer not realizing that this isn't like their last transaction, where it didn't matter. You didn't have to sign anything with your agent to go look at houses. And you didn't have to worry about that until you got closer to closing. And sometimes you might not even never worry about it. But that relationship has changed by the letter of the law. And so as consumers, when you decide to go pick an agent, or if you haven't picked an agent, please, please double check that you are going into a non-exclusive relationship when you are going to sign an agreement. Mm-hmm. Now, once you've decided that's your agent and you're going to stick with them and you're good to go 100%, of course, change that agreement, modify that agreement to become an exclusive relationship, so that your agent is protected in that situation. But until then, understand the type of agreement that you are entering.
Yeah, and so, well, wouldn't they have to explain it to you? I'm just thinking, before I sign this, it'd be like, well, you know, don't you have to, we need you to sign this, this, and this is why.
John, you are speaking about, this is why I do the radio show, because you would think that that is 100% the case on how it could be. And after I've had phone call after phone call after phone call, like, I honestly can't believe what I'm hearing on the other end of the phone when we have these phone calls. But you're exactly right. Like, somebody should say, what does this mean? What type of relationship are we establishing now? As opposed to, hey, the law says you have to sign this if I'm going to go show you another house.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, just make me vomit in my mouth. It's very, very bad. And so I thought maybe this is just a one-off and we're not going to hear about it. But when I get phone calls like this 3 times in a week, I know like, okay, this is happening out in the industry. So push back a little bit more, get an explanation of what you're signing, know what that looks like. All of our agents at Kenmore Team have gone through extensive training to the point where I was just sick of talking about it. We trained and trained and trained on it. So they are prepared and know what to help you with when you go over this document. And be on the lookout for that. I just don't want consumers out there getting obligated to something that they were not expecting. So that's the first set of conflicts that we're seeing out in the market right now. We are today going over conflict in the local real estate market, how to navigate what that looks like. I've talked way too long in the first. McKay's like, we're at a hard break and you need to get off the air. When we come back, we're going to get a pick three and talk a little bit more about conflict in real estate.
Right here on News Talk 870. Our house in the middle of our street.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. So today we've been talking about conflict in the real estate transaction, in the real estate world in Tri-Cities, big changes in how we operate and our conversations we're having with people on the phone and really before we go show them that initial house. And so we're doing a lot of phone consults and conversations about what this means in the real estate world and how we operate. Before I talk about a little bit more about that, I do want to get my pick three in. So we've got, once again, we're getting that early spring inventory right now. So there are some fantastic homes coming on the market. Pick number one, this is 102031 East Badger Road out in Kennewick. This is an incredible estate type home. 5-bedroom, 5-bath, 5,100 square foot home.
Wow.
On 6.5 acres.
That's pretty big.
Gourmet kitchen, granite counters, large island with prep sink, gas range, double ovens, main level primary suite, has its own seating area and a gas fireplace. And like I said, we're talking irrigated land in Badger Canyon, 6.5 acres, and that price point coming in at $1.1 million for that property. Large, large estate type property. Pick number two, I'm taking you to 1174 Inglewood Drive in Richland. This is a 5-bedroom, 4-bath, 4,000 square foot home in South Richland.
Wow.
And awesome living room, large picture windows, LVP flooring. This house has actually been gone through and redone top to bottom. Great gathering area off the kitchen with a fireplace and slider out to the patio. Island kitchen with butcher block counters, eating bar, and stainless steel appliances. And that's coming in at $669,900. Pick number three, all my farm agriculture buddies out there, pick number three, this one's for you. This is a 480-acre irrigated property in White Swan, 14050 Pump House Road in White Swan, just over a little bit, about an hour away from Tri-Cities. Senior and junior water rights cover approximately 370 acres. It's got 7 pivots on it, 4 solid set areas. You've got 80 horsepower, 75, and 15 horsepower pumps for great water distribution to all the pivots. And this is a big, big opportunity to get a large tract of land irrigated in one spot. And that's coming in at $4.4 million. So
wow.
When you break that down and look at that, though, if you track some of that market with irrigated farm ground. That's coming in less than $10,000 an acre on irrigated farm ground. Great opportunity for somebody looking to get a new home base or expand their operation. So some really cool properties coming on the market in this early spring market. One of the things that we've been talking about on the show today is we've been talking about conflict in the real estate process and how you manage that. Over the last 20 years, I've taken a lot of classes on negotiation and conflict management and what that looks like. And throughout a real estate transaction, one of the big things that an agent can do for a client is help manage that conflict. And one of the things that happens right off the bat and where that conflict really starts, and that is with your original offer price and the terms that you're setting up in an offer. And that comes down to balancing what a buyer thinks a property is worth and what a seller thinks a property is worth. And one of the things you have to look at is somebody buying or selling for an emotional reason, a want to, or a have to situation? Like, there's sellers that sometimes say, well, you know what? If I got $800,000 for my property, I would sell it. Mm-hmm. So let's put it on the market. And at the same time, I've had sellers, you know, that contact us and say, I'm starting a new job on the East Coast in, you know, 10 days, and I'm going to buy a house there in 30 days, and I can't afford to have two houses. So we have to sell this house in that situation. And so I've had buyers say to me at times that sometimes, in general, that want to seller, that just if they get the price they want, then they will sell, a lot of times will overprice a property to the point where it doesn't seem to make sense. And so I've had buyers say to me numerous times, even over the course of the last year, why does that seller even have that property for sale then? You know, like, why are they wasting our time in having that property for sale? They usually don't like my answer because I usually give some smart ass response like, because this is America. And like, if they want to put their house up for that price, they can. It doesn't necessarily mean anybody's going to buy it. But I get that it can be frustrating for buyers in those situations. But if you have a good agent working for you, they will likely have done an analysis to help you decide if we're even in the ballpark in that situation. But it can cause a lot of conflict because the seller might be a want-to seller. And they might have, let's say a buyer is buying because their family's moving here. We're on the other side of the equation. They need a house for their family to live in who's moving here in, you know, 30 days. Mm-hmm. Well, the worst situations you can have is if you get a have-to buyer together with a want-to seller. You write offers and there's conflict all over the map. You know, the seller feels like they get lowballed a couple hundred thousand and they don't like that. The buyer keeps asking me why this property is even on the market, but they actually really love it. And so you get into these conflict situations and you really have to coach people through that. Like, what is going on in that situation? And we can do another show on exactly crafting offers that get accepted and working with sellers to price to sell. But the big part of the conflict comes in that situation. The next big pain point that we have been seeing in Tri-Cities, in our local market, Walla Walla, Tri-Cities, Yakima, surrounding markets that we've been seeing, is the increase of conflict that happens during the inspection process with buyers and sellers right now. So we inventory's ticked up a little bit, right? So buyers have a little bit more choices. We're now 745 roughly listings on the market, but a year and a half ago there was 300 and there was no choices. So sellers didn't do a lot on home inspections. They would generally say, if you don't want the house, don't buy it, we're not fixing anything. That was very common a year and a half ago. Well, now with more options available, maybe a buyer does have two or three other options that don't have offers on them that they could go to. You're seeing buyers start to get a little bit more, we'll call it, ambitious with what they're asking for on inspections. And so you've got to really look and see, is somebody, and the biggest conflict comes is when a buyer tries to renegotiate a price based upon a previously disclosed defect. Like, for instance, if a listing says this house needs a new roof. Uh-huh. So we've priced it at $300 instead of it should be on the market at $325. Like it says that in the public comments.
Yes.
And so then you get a buyer that comes along and the buyer writes that offer for $300. They agree and they make it contingent upon an inspection. And then nothing makes a seller happier that then after the inspection, the buyer comes back and says, you know what? The inspector said it needs a new roof. And so now we would like you to put a new roof on the property. And the seller's like, I had in the remarks that I already priced it $25,000 low for that. Mm-hmm. Or they ask for the price to go down even more from, from say the $300 to $280 now. And so that is a massive point of conflict and contention during the inspection process. And so you really have to talk with your buyers about what their expectations are of the inspection. What are they looking for? Are they looking for just health, safety, conditions in that situation? Or are they looking for all cosmetic defects? And for instance, if you're at a new construction final inspection walkthrough, you might be looking for a perfect house with no cosmetic defects.
Yeah.
But in a resale situation, is that what you're looking for? Because if that's the case, we're probably never going to find that. The other thing that we see happen a lot of times where there's conflict is sellers will say, I'm so excited about the home inspection because there's nothing wrong with my house. I keep it in perfect condition. Mm-hmm. And so I every time I'm like, I'm usually walking out the door because I'm reminding them when the inspection is. And I'll just say, hey, you know, now that we're all signed around, we're going to have their buyer's going to have an inspection. They'll say, oh, I'm not worried about it at all. Our house is perfect. At which point I usually stop and say, okay, I'm so sorry. I forgot to mention to you. The buyer is paying somebody $750 to find something wrong with your house. They will find something. It yes. might be, you know, the most small, maybe there's some grout cracked or an outlet that is not working exactly how it should be, but there will be something. So I always like to set those expectations for sellers to say, this is not an indication of your house being bad or not a great house. There will be something that comes up in those yeah. situations. And so we're really, really good. And we do talk about this a lot. We train on this and we go through like some of our what we get paid for and our worth as realtors really shines through in managing those moments of conflict. And so if you're looking for somebody to help you guide you through that process, that get through that transaction, we would love to be a part of that. Feel free to go to kenmoreteam.com, shoot us a message, and we will get started on that process. Mm-hmm. With that being said, we are going to get out of here and we will be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.